What is up, my much-beloved listeners? Welcome to Fighting Failure. Today, we are here for episode 8, Kiss the Ground. And this episode is all based off this amazing documentary, which we've mentioned a couple of times in prior episodes. Kiss the Ground is narrated by Woody Harrelson, and it's just this phenomenal documentary about the importance of soil and the downsides of soil erosion, which are commonly disregarded in the environmental world of activists. So this is really just great for, educational purposes. And so we wanted to just highlight it and give everyone a little bit of an introduction to it. And we definitely recommend that you go ahead and watch that. Because it gives a lot of crucial points, a lot of ways that we're destroying the planet, which you probably didn't even know about. And a lot of the things which we talked about in our vegetarianism and veganism friend or foe episode come into this, like the tilling, etc. So let's begin. So basically, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit of a different format. So today we have the show notes and we're just going to go through a bunch of different bullet points on how it takes you through the story. So basically, first of all, in summary, there is lots of bad news coming from this, and it's quite scary, and it's, trying to find out, is there another path? Is there another way to do things? Similar to our podcast, I guess. So Oscar, would you like to start us off on the Kiss the Ground story?
Yes, I think we did forget to do introductions. I'm Oscar Archibald. I hosted the first couple of episodes.
And I'm Sandhya Stapleton. I will be hosting some episodes to come.
The makers of this documentary, looking at the soil, hence the name Kiss the Ground, they're giving us this idea of a simple solution, which is the soil, because the soil can sequester greenhouse gases. So that word sequester is going to be really important in this show. Sequester means sort of take it down and store it. So that's something that we know trees can do, and we know we can also do that technologically, and we can put the carbon in rocks and things, but actually soil has some of the biggest capacities for sequestration of greenhouse gases, so that is why soil might just save us. Furthermore, there is this very lovely sort of cycle, which is if we save our soil, our soil will save us. So it has to start with us. Because we're destroying our soil, obviously that means that we're less able to produce farmland, fertile farmland, less able to have all these sort of different things that produce crops and all of that. So if we save our soil, we are able to produce more crops, more delicious food to feed more people, and that's how soil can save us.
And more, can I add to that? If we kind of keep our healthy soil without degrading it, we will also have an easier time regenerating forests, boosting plant growth, whether that's natural or agricultural. So this might not even be for entirely agricultural purposes. That might not be the entirety of, the importance of keeping healthy soil, because healthy soil is healthy everything.
Yeah. And I think that also applies not just to the rest of the ecosystems, but also the food you grow of that soil is extremely fertile. Sorry, not fertile. Food isn't fertile, that would be weird.
More nutritious.
It's more nutritious, exactly. So you get really good food from a really good soil.
Yeah, and then that in turn benefits you, so you can kind of see how this cycle goes around. You're getting benefits from everywhere, and the planet's getting benefits, and the tree is going to get benefits from that, and so there's just, I guess, healthy soil just equates to healthy everything.
You're totally right. So the next point that the documentarians make is we need to farm like nature. So what they mean here is, well, I'll take you on an audio tour. Think of the Amazon rainforest. You've probably studied this in geography. You've seen, or INS if you're in the NYP. You've seen all these pictures, and you see so many different species. You've got, your undergrowth with small plants and grasses and decomposing leaves from trees, maybe some old logs even. And then you've got your sort of mid-range plants like palm trees and big ferns. And then you've got your really tall trees making up the huge canopy. And obviously there's lots of layers in between as well. And then you've also got a huge variety of animals and birds, insects and iguanas. Don't know if those are in the Amazon rainforest, don't quote me on that, but you've got a huge variety of organisms, both plant and animal and fungi, that are all, probably even Protoctus and bacteria, that are all making up this ecosystem. So that's what they mean when they say farm like nature, is rather than having rows and rows and rows of soya crops, we should instead have lots of different crops working together, holding each other up, as well as animals. And although the animals will eat some of the harvest, they'll give more back than they take. And so ultimately, that's why the Amazon rainforest is such a luscious and beautiful place, is because it has this variety of ecosystems. So when they say farm-like nature, they mean use lots of different crops, use trees in combination with grasses and cover crops and shorter things and birds to eat insects and all this natural ecosystem. Like, I really do think that nature does it best. And when we try to mimic nature or to be better than nature, we always fail. I think we do really always fail in the end. So exactly, that's what they mean when they farm like nature.
And that comes into permaculture and the different areas such as polyculture. And we've gone over that before in prior episodes. I think the vegetarianism and veganism, that was one of the main points of the episode. And then, we're forcing pesticides and fertilizers on these, like Oscar said, just rows and rows of plants, which is using tillage. And that's just from all sides, degrading soil, the kind of waste from the, I guess, washaway from the fertilizer is causing algae and bacterial blooms in the water. And that's just, we're degrading our ecosystems by trying to enhance our plant growth in such a way. And so I guess this farm-like nature comes from, you know, polyculture and agroforestry and all these fantastic concepts, which we'll go over more a little bit later, I think. And we've gone over prior to this. So just go back and listen to that. Go back and listen to episode, what was it, 5, Oscar?
5 was veganism and vegetarianism. 6 and 7 was what you put on your soil.
Yeah. Okay. So 5, 6, and 7, 6 and 7 are 2-part what you put on your soil. And then 5 was vegetarianism and veganism. Just go back and listen to those to get some prior knowledge on this if you want to kind of adapt your farming lifestyle in a more environmentally friendly way.
Totally. So I think one of the big methods of farming like nature that the documentary was advocating for was something called regenerative farming. And this is where you use multi-species cover crop and different varieties of species of plants rotated around to ensure a fertile soil. And so the funny thing is that they showed that actually people who practice regenerative farming, farmers who practice regenerative farming, make more money than those who do single species monocropping with fertilizers and pesticides. And so even more is that in the US and most other countries, except New Zealand, I know is one exception to this, the government subsidizes farming. And so this means that farmers know they can get a single same price for their grain they produce. So there's no incentive to be more efficient, to try and not damage the earth as much, to try and get more because they know they can get a stable income. However, even if without these government subsidies, regenerative farming can actually be more profitable. And you can imagine that because you've got species all year round. You've got different species which you can all harvest. If one species fails, then you've got so many others. So it sort of makes sense. And in fact, I've been reading this really, really thought-provoking book recently called Farmageddon, which is all about industrial farming. And although it takes a perspective on the meat industry and the factory farming rather than necessarily industrial plant agriculture, one thing that really interested me, or one thing that was really that I took from that, was that industrial agriculture is less efficient than the natural way. Even when you're throwing chemicals on, not only is that like a drug, like we talked about before, but also that when, especially with animals, there's nothing really space-saving about cramming all the animals into one space where they can't live off the land, and then having to use hectares and hectares of fertile land to grow food for this tiny farm. Why not have a bigger farm where the animals live off the land and the land lives off them? So yeah, I think regenerative farming and natural farming practices actually have much more potential to make more money.
Okay, I agree.
So like we said before, erosion is a big problem. So that's turning like soil. We're going to use these two terms quite similar. We're referring to different things. So soil is like the rich, dark, mineral and nutrients rich ground, I guess. And then the opposite of that would be dirt, which is like crusty, dusty stuff that you get when you use plows and break up the soil and take out the nutrients. So plow creates erosion because it breaks up the dirt and it releases the carbon dioxide into the air. And the carbon dioxide helps the nutrients. And so when you release it out into the air, the soil loses all those caused by the carbon dioxide. The documentary actually highlights a part in an event in the 1930s, which was a man-made disaster, which they called Dust Bowl, caused by farmers tilling the Midwestern Plain. And it caused this huge dust storm with like 200 million acres of soil that was destroyed.
That was an absolutely terrible event. And in fact, the Midwestern Plain, which used to be fertile, has still not really recovered from this huge disaster because of the use of fertilizers and pesticides and plowing, which is just destroying the topsoil. So to combat this, the contemporary President Roosevelt created the Soil Conservation Service, now the NRCS, which I think is the National Resource Conservation Service. Let me just double check that.
Yep, that's what it is.
Yes, I was right. Oh, Natural Resources. Okay, very close. And so nowadays, this same organization, the NRCS, teaches farmers to reduce tilling and chemicals. So yeah, that's what they do. They teach farmers to reduce tilling and chemicals. Because I was reading in this book that I was talking about before, is that farmers are actually not necessarily always, many farmers are, but not necessarily always completely knowledgeable about to do. And especially in developing countries, they rely on advice from these profit-interested companies that want to sell them things like GM seeds and herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers, always promising huge returns. And in fact, they often don't get these returns. So it might sound a bit silly, but in fact, teaching farmers is a very valuable thing to do when a lot of their information might come from people who are purely interested in selling them stuff. And in fact, I think there's a place in India where a farmer kills themselves every 30 minutes because they go in debt because they tried to buy new seeds that a biotech company promised would work and then harvest failed 2 years in a row. Things like that. It's actually absolutely horrible.
Yeah, I agree. And guys, this education and these educational resources are also being put out by the Kiss the Ground organization. And you can actually get online classes if you can afford them. There's an educational edition of Kiss the Ground, which we loved that format because it's free to teachers and educators, so they can get it, they can display it to farmers, and it's so there's lots of resources being put out not only by these, I guess, widespread organizations like NRCS, but these newer organizations such as Kiss the Ground. And so that's another reason which we wanted to promote this documentary. And so if you work in agriculture, it would be great to go ahead and watch the educational edition, display it to your farmers, people who you work with, and it provides a lot of solutions. And then you can also sign up for an online course, and that I was actually looking into that. I kind of wanted to do it, and I don't know, I might try it during the summer, but I don't know, it's quite expensive. But if you can do that, it looks really great. I've looked at some of the resources which they provide, and so that just looks really fantastic for someone looking into sustainable agriculture and how they can do that.
So the documentary insists that farmers don't understand their soil. And so this is a really huge problem because farmers are the ones who are using the soil. Farmers are the ones who are reaping the benefits of the soil. So ultimately, it is in the farmer's interest to protect the soil and to keep it fertile. But ultimately, many farmers just end up throwing fertilizers on it, paying huge amounts for these fertilizers, and they're really, really hugely damaging. It's like a nitrogen crisis as well as a carbon crisis because of this. And if farmers understand the soil, that can actually be so beneficial to our food system. So something really interesting that the documentary likes to talk about is that carbon is the good guy. Now, carbon obviously gets a lot of negative press, and it rightly deserves it. Carbon dioxide, specifically the carbon dioxide, which is carbon and two oxygens, and also carbon monoxide, which is usually poisonous as well, of greenhouse gases. And so, in fact, carbon dioxide is such a common and bad greenhouse gas is that the scale of global warming is based off how much carbon dioxide this would be equivalent to. If you get what I mean, I'll put a link to that in the description as well. So carbon dioxide is a horrible greenhouse gas, but actually carbon is the good guy in general. Carbon is essential for life. And now, really interestingly, we were doing this in chemistry recently, and the reason for this is that carbon is sort of right bang in the middle of the periodic table of elements. So carbon has 4 valence electrons, which means 4 out of 8. So about half of its outer shell of electrons, sorry if you can't not following along right here, are in the shell, right? So this means that let me try and simplify this. So an atom wants to have a complete outer shell of electrons. So currently, so in its atomic state, carbon has 4 outer shell electrons. Mm-hmm. So in order to have a full outer shell, so a full outer shell is 8, it could either gain 4 more electrons and have 8 in the outer shell, or lose 4 electrons. That shell is empty, and the outermost shell is now full as well. So basically, carbon, it can go either way to become a full outer shell, but also because it has 4 valence electrons, it can bond with 4 other molecules. Or sorry, 4 other atoms to become a species. And this means you can have long chains of carbons. You can make so many different things out of carbon. So really, the fact that it has 4 valence electrons, which is very middle of the road, can bond with enough different things. That is why carbon is the basis of all life on Earth. And that's why we are all carbon-based life forms. There has been scientific research into whether we can have silicon-based life forms, because that also has 4 valence electrons. But really, carbon is just the basis of all life. So carbon is essential for growth. 40% of carbon enzyme goes through the roots of plants to feed soil microorganisms, which benefits plants, And this is how carbon gets fixed in the soil. And now the soil contains a universe of life. And that's really just like humans. I don't know how scientifically accurate this next fact is, or factoid that the documentary came, but we're sort of 1% human, 99% microbe. Like, even sometimes microbes process food for us. So again, I'm sort of doubting this. I know there's huge functions of bacteria in our gut, but also, like, there are enzymes that we do produce for digestion. But to be completely fair, microbes are hugely important, and very few microbes are actually pathogens to us, or that we get rid of those. So yeah, they say this really interesting thing. And again, don't try this at home. The key to health is eating dirt. Good soil. So then they say dirt, but they really do mean soil. Good soil leads to good food, and that leads to good health. This is reciprocation. We feel better because we have better food, and the earth is better because the earth needs a good soil. Take over, Hisha. Okay.
I was also just gonna say, and this is not related entirely, but there are some crazy cases, and I'm just saying this because it's a little bit interesting, where pregnant women have needed nutrients and have felt the urge and have, like, gotten to their knees and started digging up soil and eating it to provide their body with sufficient nutrients to, like, be able to process what they have to do. And some crazy stories. So key to health is eating dirt. People have done that. I don't recommend it. Dirt doesn't taste great. I play rugby, and sometimes when you get it in your mouth, it's like, but it's not a yummy snack. So don't go to your knees and start eating dirt.
In my sport, I'm more likely to drink water.
Yeah.
And you row, like, you get these splashes.
Yeah, when I swim, I get water all the time. But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the chlorine in the swimming pool water.
But chlorine water tastes better than river water.
Yeah, it does, I guess, but...
Yeah, they didn't mean it literally. It's a metaphor.
Yeah, they didn't mean it literally. Yeah. Don't take it to heart, okay? And so, like Oscar was saying, let me just continue this now, going away from our little bit of our adventure to the side there. Good soil is good food, more nutritious food, more nutritious crops, and more nutritious food leads to better health, I guess, good health. And so it all kind of reciprocates in this beautiful way when we have good soil. And so I guess we feel better when the earth is better, and that's something important. So just everyone take that to heart, everyone keep that in mind, because that's very important. So it's not just that healthy soil is going to store carbon, it's that healthy soil is going to provide more nutrition to our plants, I think, as we mentioned earlier, and then that's going to help us significantly. And so that's very important. Oh, I've just lost internet connection. How wonderful. Oh man, why me? Internet.
I think he's having internet issues.
Yes, I'm back. Okay, I think my internet's a little bit unstable. So Oscar, do you want to continue for a little bit, or Sandhya? Because I think I might cut out.
Cool. Yeah, sure. Okay, great. So the next point that they make after reciprocation is spraying soil with toxic chemicals bad. So if you're a Fighting Failure listener, you probably already know this: spraying soil with toxic chemicals. You know, we're not very good at science, so we can't just kill one thing. We just end up killing everything. And understandably, that's bad, because as we know, we're all budding young scientists and ecologists, is that ecosystems, like we were talking about before, the Amazon rainforest, all the different animals support all the different animals in their own ways. And this is a hugely complex system. And when we just throw fertilizers and pesticides on the soil, it doesn't just kill your pests and doesn't just fertilize the land. It has huge, terrible side effects. So when you spray your soil with toxic chemicals, it's bad and for the soil, and that means it's bad for the plants. But also, you could end up eating these toxic chemicals, which are toxic, which cause things like birth defects and cancer. So yeah, get organic food, I suppose. Isho, do you think your internet's better yet?
Okay, so basically, soil under agriculture is generally bad if it's not polyculture, if it's not agroforestry, because what we're doing is we're tilling, and tilling is overturning soil that's exposing the carbon to the air, and then the carbon is forming a bond with the oxygen, like Oscar mentioned, and then that's carbon dioxide, and then the soil loses fertility from that, and then the microbes begin to die off, and then the plants can't get the benefits of the microbes and the nutrients in the soil, and it's just this absolutely vicious vicious cycle, which we get into, and that's the same when we spray pesticides, and that's killing the microbes, and then the plants aren't healthy, and then we eat the plants, and we're not getting the nutritional benefits which we think we're getting, and then we're unhealthy, and it's just this very vicious cycle, and it's bad for both us, it's bad for our ecosystems, it's bad for our atmosphere, it's just altogether not so great. And so Fritz Haber, is that how you say his name? Fritz? Haber, okay, invented a synthetic fertilizer and pesticides for use in a gas chamber. Am I incorrect? During World War II? Yeah, involved with, okay. So he was involved in the invention of the gas chamber, which was part of the Holocaust, which was the killing of Jewish peoples during World War II under the kind of Nazi rule of Adolf Hitler. And so this is this. Anyway, so basically you have this crazy scientist guy who helped mass murder people inventing synthetic fertilizers and pesticides. And then people were like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. Let's just use all the stuff which he's provided us. But it's like, we've not remembered that this is just some absolutely crazy, like, homicidal man. And that, so he created these things, but we didn't think twice when we were using them that they might actually be bad. And so, you know, so basically that's just a little bit of information for you. And it's just this ridiculous thing that we took on something which this mass murderer created, and we've been using it up until present. I don't think many people knew that. And that's absolutely ridiculous, I think.
Pesticides were originally created as a chemical weapon.
Yeah.
That's the key. As we talked about, these poisons that Fritz Haber made became pesticides and fertilizers. And this meant that farmers could get a good yield from their crops without taking care of their soil. And so this transformed what was mixed farming, when you've got some animals and some grazing and some crops, you know, and a small scale farm, to single industry. Some farmers do feed lots of cows, mega piggeries, huge chicken industrial farms, and some farmers do plowing, chemical row crops. There was no mixing. And so instead of understanding natural processes, farmers just throw chemicals at it, expecting that to solve the problem. And the problem is, it does. But then you need more chemicals, and more chemicals, and more chemicals. And as I said before, it's just like doing cocaine or heroin or some other drug. You need more and more to get the same euphoria. So it now takes more fertilizer than it did half a decade ago. Not half a decade ago, but a half a century ago. You need much more fertilizer, in fact. I can't remember what it was. It was like 3 bags to 11 or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but it was like order of magnitude or something. No, orders of magnitude. Okay. Anyway, it was a lot more. It was many more times. So then what they do is they make GM crops that are altered to be resistant to pesticides so that we can keep throwing more and more pesticides on it, because obviously nature is finding a way around us and becoming resistant to pesticides. So we need stronger pesticides, and we have to GM our crops, which creates huge other problems because, as I said, we can never beat nature. Our GM crops often cause problems, and they're hugely unregulated in the US. And there's this key part of a pesticide, I think it is, called glyphosate, which causes cancer. And now, because it's put absolutely everywhere, it's in the American water supply, 3 pounds of glyphosate are ingested every year for every American. It goes everywhere. It's transferred into babies from their mothers, has huge adverse health effects. And in fact, juries in the US have awarded huge damages for people suffering from side effects related to glyphosate, because, you know, farmers and other big chemical companies shouldn't be allowed to pollute the world like this.
Yeah. And I just wanted to give a little bit of a side note to those who might not have fully understood what GM meant. And so GM is genetically modified. And so what Oscar was mentioning was genetically modified agriculture. And that's just for your own reference. So basically, as we were saying in, I think that's episode 6 now, pesticides kill microbes in our soil and kill the microbes in our gut once they work their way into our system. And then this basically leads to chronic stress. So this is these problems in our gut. So Sandhya, would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so in our stomachs, there are like thousands of microbes and bacteria, like a good and a bad. So when we are ingesting these pesticides, it's kind of like, what are my words with my brain? Probiotics. Probiotics, and then also like the ones that kill like bacteria. So when you're ingesting these pesticides that are like in our food, in our water, they're killing microbes in our guts, both good and bad. So it's like literally destroying our gut health and all like the life gut.
And so then that's just leading to all types of digestion issues and, as you mentioned, cancers and these crazy things, because our bodily microbial life is not able to live on. And then that's, I guess, then they're not able to give us their benefits as regular. And then, of course, as you might guess, and as I've mentioned, that's just going to reciprocate and hurt us. And so moving on from that, go back to episode 6 if you want more on that. But for now, I just wanted wanted to highlight this crazy statistic which they mentioned, which is that 1/3 of the Earth's topsoil is gone. Okay, anyway, 1/3 of the Earth's topsoil is gone, and that is just this ridiculous number. And we're still losing topsoil, and I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but when they were mentioning the Great Dust Bowl in the Midwest, and if you just look at the satellite map, you'll be able to see that a lot of that land in the Midwest is crazily infertile. You can see that through that, just that satellite footage and of the U.S., that the Midwest is just crazily, it's just like this one brown, it's like a brown plain, and it's just ridiculous. And you know, you'll occasionally get mountains and glaciers, but it's just from this unsustainable farming and this unsustainable agricultural system which we have, and you can see the damage which it's causing, and that's crazy. So when we damage the soil, we release carbon back into the atmosphere. Oscar, would you mind scrolling down? So basically, healthy soils absorb carbon, and so that reduces the carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide in the atmosphere. But unhealthy soil, so tilled soil, in which you know the carbon is exposed to oxygen, releases the carbon, and that becomes carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, which are both these potent greenhouse gases, and that leads to desertification, which is this process which we're in some places, where you go from these green fertile lands to croplands to desert. And it's happening very widespread. And as I mentioned, you can look at a picture of the US, and the regeneration is so slow in the Midwest because of basically the desertification is, what was I saying? I lost myself, Oscar. You've ruined it. Okay. Anyway, this desertification is, you can see the reciprocation globally. You can see it in every continent. You can see these odd patches of desert, which shouldn't be there. And that is, you can basically rely on the fact that it's from this unsustainable agriculture, and from creating too much bare ground. Oscar, what did you mean by that? Can you explain?
I spelt it wrong.
Oh,
bare ground.
B-A-R-E ground. I was like,
I'm stupid.
Like, are there bears living in the ground? But okay, from creating too much bare ground. So Oscar put this point in our show notes, which he very politely made for us. Thank you so much, Oscar. But creating too much bare ground, not B-E-A-R, bear, like the animal, but he means B-A-R-E, bear, like naked, like a bear butt, a bear.
No, like when you take away the trees.
Like when the soil becomes naked because there's no grass protecting it.
Because they ate the fruit from God's tree and realized they were naked.
Okay, so everything is connected.
Let's move on. Without living plant, we have evaporation, not transpiration. Without living plant.
Oscar, we're just gonna comment on your spelling and grammar here.
I'm sorry. I watched through the entire movie taking notes, please.
So transpiration is the process. I learned this in, I think, biology last year, so I might be a little bit off point, but I will give it my best. So transpiration is the process where water is kind of evaporates out of the pores in the leaves. That's the most simple way to state it. That's the stomata, right? Yeah.
Transpiration is the process of water movement from through a plant and its evaporation from aerial parts such as leaves, stems, and flowers. Water is necessary for plants, but only a small amount of water taken up the roots is used for growth and metabolism.
And that link will be in the show notes now. So anyway, that's basically, transpiration is very simply the process of this kind of regularity of water loss through the pores in a plant's leaves. These, you can't see the pores. There's not like huge like holes in a leaf. Yeah, they're micro. You can't see them, but there are pores and the water evaporates out of those pores. That's the most simple way to say it. The pores are known as stomata. But anyway, and so without living plants, transpiration cannot occur, quite obviously, because that transpiration is coming from the leaves. And then instead we're having evaporation, which is basically just water going from liquid form, H2O going from liquid form to gas form, to its gaseous form. So it basically becomes steam, I think steam. And then that, you know, then the soil's losing its, water vapor. And then the soil's losing that moisture. And then that is also where you get that crusty and dusty, because the soil is no longer, wet and fertile. So it's not being held down. So that's dusty. Or crusty is where it's kind of like just dried out. And you kind of similarly to clay, when you bake it and it dries out, you just get these plates forming. And so that's the crusty, kind of like, what was it? I think about 1 or 2 years ago, the PE pitch at BMIS, which is my school in Malawi, was so dry. It was crusty. And oh my gosh, I got so cut up on it during rugby. I think everyone did. Wasn't too much fun. But anyway, crusty and dusty is infertile soil. And we we mentioned that last episode. I'm very proud of myself for that, actually. I came up with that on the spot. Crusty and dusty are not good. But anyway, so basically then that leads to more rain and more humidity, unpredictable weather patterns, of course, because you're getting this irregular moisture in the air, and then that's gonna lead to irregular rainfall. But anyway, Oscar, would you like to continue for a little bit?
Right, so there's $60 of rainfall from... No, that's I'm just joking. I made another typo. So it's not $60 of rainfall, but 60% of rainfall comes from the large water cycles, which is where it gets evaporated from the oceans. 40% of rainfall comes from small water cycles, which is involved with transpiration from trees. So when we have desertification, this sort of pushes rainfall away. Without plants, you have hotter climate a day and colder climate at night. This is called a microclimate. But when you have these sort of desertification changes on more than half the land, you're changing the bigger scale, the macroclimate. And so in fact, 2/3 of the world is desertifying. And this has horrible side effects. So 40 million people are pushed off the land every year. By 2050, it's estimated there'll be 1 billion people who are refugees of desertification. That's right, we're killing our own land, making ourselves refugees even without wars. This is a huge problem. So really interestingly, ancient civilizations have failed because of bad agricultural practices. It's not just a modern problem. Think the Mayans, think the Incas, think the ancient Egyptians, places that used to be the cradle of humankind, now deserts. I mean, what does Mesopotamia look like now, you know? And so this is another vicious cycle. Poor land leads to poor people because they can't feed themselves, which leads to social breakdown because malnutrition and all that stuff, which leads to mass immigration, like refugee crises. Exactly. The way we're feeding ourselves is undermining the ecology we're dependent on.
And so guys, we have this statistic you've highlighted a couple of times. So this statistic is that the world's remaining topsoil will be gone within the next 60 years. Six decades is all we have left with our beautiful, rich, nutritious, I guess, topsoil. And that's all because of our unsustainable agriculture, which is worldwide. It's developed in different ways everywhere, but it's all the same. We're tilling. We're now in modern day spraying pesticides, putting whatever fertilizers we're going to put on the soil. And that's just going to degrade and degrade and degrade our soil. And this is why we only have 60 years left, which means that we only have 60 harvests left. 60 harvests left. That's it. Unless we change it now.
In the documentary, they showed this, I think it was a chart from NASA, showing carbon dioxide being released. So when the farmers were tilling, you could see these huge plumes of carbon dioxide coming off the soil, and it was pretty horrible. But then, when the plants were flourishing, there was almost like drawdown. Their CO2 levels were really low because the plants were flourishing. So this shows that a covered planet is a healthy planet.
And guys, it's not only the plants which will be, in the case of healthy soil, it's not only the plants which will be growing, which will be taking in CO2 and reducing that in the atmosphere, but also the soil has this huge potential to hold carbon, and so that can also be so the carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide levels in the atmosphere can also be reduced via healthy topsoil and healthy soil, and that's important to keep in mind too. So it's not just that healthy plants are important; it's this healthy soil, because without healthy soil, we won't even have healthy plants, number one. But without healthy soil won't be able to take in carbon and reduce CO2 and carbon monoxide levels in the atmosphere. CO, I guess, carbon monoxide, CO, right? So a covered planet is a healthy planet. So agriculture is the biggest way that humans impact our landscape, though. By covered, we mean, we're not talking about soil here, we're talking about healthy soil. Healthy soil leading to, you know, tree cover, grass cover. I guess then that will be, there'll be foliage cover. So just this overall land cover provided by nature. So covered planet is a healthy planet because within a covered planet, we have these rich ecosystems. And like I just said, agriculture is the biggest way that humans impact our landscape, which was mentioned in Kiss the Ground, which is why I guess we're talking about it right now. But so that is, I guess, this legacy load of carbon dioxide is a large part of it is coming from this agricultural sector. And it's unintended when you go to the store and you buy your vegetables, being either a vegetarian or an omnivore, whatever you are, going to the store and buying your vegetables, there's a lot of unthought, you know, these downsides, which you would never think of. But basically what's happening is that as you till, you're releasing carbon dioxide. And as you spray pesticides, you're releasing carbon dioxide. And it's just this continual cycle, as we said. And being someone who buys vegetables, that's increasing your carbon footprint, and that is adding to the legacy load of carbon dioxide.
Legacy load is carbon dioxide still in the air. Even when we reach net zero, we won't be able to, there'll because the current will keep warming, so we need to get rid of carbon dioxide, which, and the soil is a great vessel for that. There you go, done.
So that means that we can still reverse global warming, and that's via biosequestration. And we mentioned sequestration earlier, and that's basically, biosequestration is kind of building on sequestration. Bio is life, so using plants and trees to capture carbon and keep it in the soil. And so we can reverse global warming, but it's going to take a lot of effort. And so now let's turn to politics. Sandhya?
So in the Paris Climate Summit, or COP21, we got some hope from the France Minister of Agriculture. France has the largest agro-science institution, which is INRA, I-N-R-A. I can't remember what that stands for. Do you know, Oscar?
Institut National de la Recherche Agronomique.
So INRA proposed this 4-for-1,000 initiative to increase carbon content of soils by 0.4% annually. So that would be sequestering the same amount of carbon as we emit here. Each year we emit 0.4% of the carbon content for soils. So plants plus atmosphere equals 1,700 GT. And with the soil, you'd have 4,000 GT, gigatons, of carbon.
And so basically that's just the potential for soil is to hold. So what Sandhya just mentioned there is the soil's potential, as I mentioned earlier, still has this high potential to hold greenhouse gases. Carbon, I think, is in specific here. So it's 4,000 gigatons, which is like, what is it? Almost just under, so basically just under three times more than the plants and the atmosphere currently hold. So we have this ridiculous potential, which is so commonly dumbed down, so ignored. And this is why we really wanted to highlight this documentary, because it's so fantastic in the way that it highlights this unknown side of our climate and how we can resolve a lot of these issues. And so it's just this really great thing. I love that they provide the statistic, because it's very, in my mind, I see like a chart, and it just, to me, that's absolutely ridiculous seeing the difference of the two. And so that just proves to me that soil is a solution. Soil is a solution, and we should be utilizing that, actively utilizing that. We're not currently doing that widespread. And so that's a big takeaway from this entire documentary.
Yeah. Okay. So the idea here with this initiative, it was to sequester the same amount of carbon as we emit each year. And 30 countries signed this agreement and agreed to like try to sequester the same amount of carbon they emit each year. But here's the catch. India, the USA, and China didn't sign. And they are like the biggest emitters. With India, you have 1,602 million tons of carbon per year. USA, you have 5,425 million tons. And with China, you have 7,711 million tons of carbon released each year. So this whole idea with sequestering the carbon would require radical reduction in pesticides. And these three countries use pesticides way too much. And they just did not agree to stop using it. The US actually pulled out from the Paris Agreement completely.
Under Donald Trump, our beautiful orange president. Luckily, Biden has just rejoined the PCA, Paris Climate Agreement, and I'm so, so happy about that. It was one of the first things he did, and the beautiful thing about the PCA is that the way that they structured it is really smart. So they have it's really, really hard to leave the PCA, but it's very easy to rejoin the PCA. So it's basically a four-year process to leave the PCA, and then you can join within a couple of weeks, and that's just so amazing, because it took the whole of Donald Trump's presidency to pull out of the PCA, and then Biden just immediately dove back in. And that's, I love the way that they've structured that so that to keep countries involved for longer.
We need to switch to renewables. That means switching to renewables is always good. We've talked about it in previous episodes, how like wind, solar, and hydro. Yeah. And how we can use those to like lower the emissions. But it doesn't alter the legacy load. It just decreases our emissions. It doesn't lower the overall amount that's already out there. So even if we stop emissions, that legacy load remains. So, and it's still warming the atmosphere. So what we want is to have negative emissions. And soil is the solution to that. Soil, like sequestration, that's what we've been talking about this entire time. It's like, we need to sequestrate all of these emissions and get rid of all those emissions that still remain in the atmosphere, warming the atmosphere. So if we draw down year to year and get a reduction of emissions, that will solve, that could, that is a really solid solution.
We're gonna shoot through this, guys, because we've been going for much longer than we intended to, and we just kind of wanted to give you the basic idea. So I think we've highlighted everything super important. Then they go through so many fantastic solutions, fantastic examples of ways that people have taken action to benefit the climate and benefit their local areas, like this brilliant project in China where there was this former mountain which was agricultural, and it had turned into like this big, essentially a big dune. It was just like this pile of sand, and there was this regenerative process which took place, and they were able to make the soil fertile again, and then in doing so they're able to bring back crops in that area in a sustainable way and provide a sustainable income to farmers there. And it's just this beautiful documentary provides so many solutions, so many great examples to this crisis, and specifically to, you know, this whole concept of the use of soil. And so I think it's just a really great documentary. Go ahead and listen to it. We've given you the basic idea. We've got you halfway through that documentary, but I still go watch it. It's this phenomenal documentary. And I think with that, because Oscar has to go, yeah, it's on Netflix. You can find it. Go to, what is it? Kiss the ground dot what? Let me just provide the site before we sign off. Kissthegroundmovie.com. Go to kissthegroundmovie.com. Find out where you can stream it, send it to friends, share it, you know, whatever. But it's just amazing. Okay, I've been praising it for quite a while now. I think it must have been like 2 minutes already. So anyway, we're not going to go through the rest because of time constraints. Oscar has to go do something.
I think before we sign off, there's just one more point that I think he should like to make. Can you give us like a 1 minute summary of rotating cattle grazing?
Okay, I did want to highlight this in this episode because this was my favorite kind of section of the documentary. And so I guess before we'll sign off, I'll do this last part. Thank you, Oscar, for making the time for me to do this. But so this regenerative cattle farming and herding is this fantastic idea, I thought, and I loved it. So basically, I don't remember the woman's name, but anyway, in the documentary, there was this family, and they own a cattle ranch, right? And so they have tons of space. They're somewhere in the US. I can't remember a lot of the details, but, and so what they do is they have their cattle, lots of cattle. But what they do, instead of keeping them in these little, I guess, plants and giving them cattle feed or just letting them graze in one little pasture area, is they have this like large piece of land. And so what they do is they have this fence, this movable fence. And so every day they have basically this grid spread across their land. So what they do is that they have the cattle go from one like little square to the next square every day, and they move that fence. And so then the cattle don't have time to trample the greens, the plant life. And that is another contributor to soil erosion, if you didn't know. I think we're going to highlight that later in our agriculture section. But is that when cattle, hoofed animals, actually they uproot the plant life, and then they overturn the soil as they, I guess, trample it, as they walk over it. And so keeping them in one space for too long means that they're going to entirely just degrade that area. And so they move them from place to place so that they don't have enough time to degrade one area, but they also don't let the plant life, and by plant life I'm talking about like grasses and like wild flora, not like agriculture plants. But, and so basically that these cattle don't have time to degrade any area, so because they're going from area to area to area. And so that's just this fantastic idea that in moving around your cattle, you're not only providing them a healthy lifestyle by enabling them to eat nutritious grass, but you're also keeping the soil healthy by not enabling your cattle to trample one area and cause soil erosion. And I just thought this was the most fantastic idea, and I loved it. So I really wanted to highlight that. And thank you, Oscar, for creating the time for me to make that final point in this briefing of Kiss the Ground. Like I was saying earlier, for about 5 minutes, go ahead, watch Kiss the Ground. It is such an amazing documentary. And with that, I thank you all for listening. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.